Eat Drink Indiana Radio is brought to you by Eskenazi Health, one of Central Indiana's leading providers of health care with a focus on patient-centered care. Eat Drink Indiana Radio is powered by EatDrinkIndy.com, where Central Indiana turns to learn about food from farm to fork and drink from grains to glass.
Welcome to Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD To The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. Today on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, we'll do some baking with pastry chef Cindy Hawkins of Circle City Sweets, and we'll talk Valentine's Day with chocolatier Julie Boljak of Chocolate for the Spirit. We'll be in the kitchen with Chef John Adams for our Cook This segment, and we'll also talk with him about some upcoming special dinners. We'll also hear from farmers market vendor Josh Horrigan of Annabelle's Garden, and we will check out the new menu at the Fashion Mall location of Shapiro's Delicatessen with Sally Keck Shapiro. So stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD2 and WFYI.org. So, you know I like to cook. Well, I tend to get on a kick when I come up with something. Last winter, it was macaroni and cheese. I made probably half a dozen different versions, most billed as the ultimate or the best ever. I eventually found a version I liked best, but by then I was on to another obsession. Well, lately I've been thinking about classical dishes, the old school French dishes that are in Mastering the Art of French Cooking by Julia Child. And specifically, I was thinking about soufflés. Now, honestly, I had never made a soufflé, and I don't even recall ever eating one in a restaurant. But I decided last weekend that I was going to make a soufflé. If you follow me on Facebook, you might have seen my posts about Soufflé Sunday. Well, last Sunday night, I did try making a soufflé. And it didn't really come out the way I had envisioned. I wasn't sure if I had overbeaten or underbeaten the egg whites. I just knew I wasn't folding them in correctly, and I knew they were going to deflate, and then I didn't know how full to fill the ramekins, and well, eventually the final product tasted okay, but it certainly wasn't what you would call impressive. So I do what I so often do. I went public and posted on Facebook. I got plenty of comments, questions, and advice, but what I needed was to see someone make a soufflé. So pastry chef Cindy Hawkins of Circle City Sweets, who also teaches in the culinary program at Ivy Tech Community College, was nice enough to invite me to stop by the school for a little soufflé instruction.
The one we make here in classical pastries is a chocolate soufflé. It's going to have a little Grand Marnier and some orange juice in it. The other one we're going to do, the French pastry one, is just a plain French souffle, no chocolate. It's just going to be neutral kind of flavor. We're going to make our souffle base first. So we're going to take the orange juice. We're going to heat that up on a saucepan. I'm going to whisk the egg yolks and my first little bit of sugar together. Actually, most of my sugar, not even all my sugar. And then we're going to add the flour and put that back on the saucepan. It's going to get a little bit thick. I'm going to let that get a little bit thick, but I don't want it to boil. I don't want it to reach that boiling point. I just want it thick. Just want it warm. Then we're going to add our chocolate and our Grand Marnier to that. And then basically we're just going to fold our egg whites into that. Then we're going to gently bring everything in, put it in our cups, and go.
Okay, so you have heating up the orange juice, right?
I have my orange juice, and in my bowl I've got most of my sugar, the flour, and my egg yolks. So now I'm going to add my warm orange juice to my other ingredients. We're going to just stir that up together, bring it all together, and I'm going to put it back into the saucepan. And then I'm going to cook this till it gets thick. Again, I don't want it to boil. I just want to make it thick. So now I'm putting everything back into the saucepan. Put that back under my heat for just a couple minutes. We're going to keep stirring it the whole time. And again, I don't want it to boil. So when you're doing souffles, you can actually make the base, the first part of it, anything but the egg white the day before. You can have it all ready to go. If you are in a restaurant where you do make these, you could have a bunch of base and keep in the fridge for a day. Then what you do is take that part out and fold in your egg whites, your whipped egg whites, when you're ready to use it. Part of the reason why you don't see souffle in restaurants is a timing situation. It's not a pastry department can't make it. The cooks can't make it. it's, you have to really be able to time it just right.
So the customer has to be ready for that souffle when it's ready to go.
Yeah, the customer has to be ready for that souffle when the kitchen's ready to send it out. So there's no sitting around. So you see how thick we got? We've got a nice thick paste. We're going to go ahead and add our chocolate to this, and we're going to just stir it till it all gets melted. I've got just a nice dark chocolate in here, just some Calibo, probably 56 or 64%. We're just going to stir this till it's all melted. As soon as that's melted, I'm going to add my Grand Marnier. We're doing a chocolate orange souffle here.
And it's not taking long to melt.
No, right? No. It's pretty warm. Chocolate melts pretty quickly. And then we'll add our Grand Marnier on top of that. And just let this all get incorporated. Then we'll transfer everything back to our bowl and put our saran wrap on top to keep that bacteria and that skin from forming. While that's coming to room temp, we'll go ahead and make our second base with the French Pastry School recipe. And then this will be cool enough. We can do our egg whites. We'll do the egg whites for the second one and then pretty much go in the oven right about the same time.
Now, this is from your school.
This is French Pastry School, yep. This is what we had to make as students. This was one of your practical exams during your section. This was for a plated desserts class. So this was one of the ones that was on a very strict timeline. So you had an appointed oven time for your souffle. And if you missed your oven time, you were out of luck. You had to wait, and hopefully you could find oven space later. But, you know, I remember as a kid, or even watching TV when I was younger, like they would be talking about souffles on a sitcom or something, and it would always be like, don't touch the oven door, it'll collapse, you know. They're fragile. They're not that fragile, you know. I think we get a little crazy sometimes.
So after creating a base for two souffles, one with chocolate and Grand Marnier and one with just vanilla, we started talking about egg whites.
So with your egg whites could always use a little help. Right. Be that a little bit of sugar, be that a little cream of tartar, be that a pinch of salt. They always could use a little bit of something. You can certainly whip egg whites without anything, but this gives it a little extra stability. So it'll let it be handled a little bit better. I'm going to turn that one on here. So we've got our first recipe, which was the chocolate. We're going to go ahead and start those egg whites. And these are just egg whites. This recipe just uses just good old egg whites.
I'm always worried that I'm not whipping them enough or I'm whipping them too much.
Well, egg whites are interesting. You know, you can tell by looking at them now, they're nowhere near ready. They're really wet. They're really kind of sloshy. You'll go through a little kind of a little arc of egg white. There's, you'll get those soft peaks where if you pull your whisk out and you kind of just like pull up a big bunch of your whites, it'll kind of bend just a little bit, kind of hang down. If it hangs pretty low, like the little triangle, little point, soft peaks, not ready. Medium peaks will be a little bit stiffer. Those stiff peaks are usually what we're looking for. If you get them and all of a sudden you're kind of lumpy, there's big pieces of, it doesn't come out really nice and smooth and pretty, you've gone too far.
Okay, now tell me about the ramekins and what you're going to do with those.
Okay, first I want to make sure I have a straight-sided ramekin. Okay. So we've got a couple different ones here. This one, you see it's got that really big lip in it.
Right.
It won't come up as pretty in this one. This one, it's more of, this is a souffle dish. It's kind of more that straight side. I'm going to have some butter that's been melted but re-kind of coagulated a little bit.
So you could still spread it.
Yeah, yeah. I want it to be like that soft butter, like kind of butter you could put on toast easily.
Right.
I'm going to go ahead and stop these from whisking while we do that. I want to keep them moving always.
Oh,
low speed.
Right, okay.
So I'm going to take that butter, kind of pasty butter. I'm going to do the sides of my dish. I'm going to just brush up the sides. But I want to make sure I get it off. I've got a little lip. I want to make sure I get that filled in too. Okay. So up and down. Some people say go straight up and down. I honestly don't know if that makes a difference, but it can't hurt, so we'll give it a try. Okay. So I'm going to get all my dishes ready. Then what I want to do is I want to get a little bit of granulated sugar, and I'm going to sprinkle it. Just like if you were going to coat a pan with flour and butter and flour,
uh-huh.
Same principle. It's going to help it to not stick, but we don't want to put flour on this because why would you want to eat raw flour? Sugar is what we want to go with. So what you always want to do, you want to fold your lighter item into your heavier item. So my souffle base is obviously the heavier of the items, right?
Right.
It's much thicker, heavier. So I want to take about half or so of maybe a third of this, and we want to just start bringing it in here, okay?
Now, how much do you stir to incorporate? I always
75% of the way.
Okay.
So when about 75% of my egg whites are incorporated, I'm going to grab the next little chunk. What we don't want to do is if you mixed all of it in now, right. you're going to deflate all your egg whites before you get to the end of it. Right. So I'm going to take the next little bit. The other thing, too, is I watch people fold. This is one of the reasons I like teaching the intro to baking class, because I like them to learn those basic techniques. You watch people fold, they're going, twisting, and, you know, kind of like it looks like they're trying to play golf, like every uncomfortable move. Your right hand, if you're right-handed, your right hand holds your whisk or your spatula. I also fold with a whisk. It also will help to incorporate air if you're afraid of deflating. Your left hand, all it does is spin the bowl. That's all it does. Spins the bowl. With my right hand, I put the spatula in the very center of my product. I lift it, and I set it right back on top. It might not feel like you're accomplishing anything, but I promise you are, and you're not deflating all your egg whites. So then what I'm going to do is I'm going to take this and I'm going to portion it into my souffle cups. I want it to go over the top. I want it to go too big.
So how much do you fill up?
I want to be able to scrape it off with an offset spatula and cover rim to rim the entire thing, okay? So I'm going to put some in here. I guess I could have grabbed a spoon or something.
So you're really filling it right up to the top.
To the very top. I'm going to actually overfill it a little bit, and then we'll wipe the edges off again. Now, that trick with the thumbnail...
Right, so you're going to run your thumb around the edge.
I'm going to take my thumb, and I basically want to separate that top edge. I want to get it away from the lip of the glass, of the souffle dish. So I just kind of, just a little bit of a rim there.
And they don't bake very long, right?
They don't, about 15, 20 minutes. Again, sometimes it can be hard for people to decide when they're done. They're going to have a little bit, almost like a little bit of a wet look on the outside edge. That's okay. You know, it's a moist product, but they're going to still be, they'll be a little bit firm to the touch, but again, you want to be super, super careful with them. They're not the kind of thing that you want to keep opening the oven door. Do you think they're done? Do you think they're done? Because eventually they're going to fall and you're going to be sad. Sad things happen. The key would be make sure you have a nice flat sheet tray. That top one of mine is not terribly straight. Nice flat sheet tray. And just a nice, quiet kitchen, you know, just a nice, nice space where you don't have, you know, people running around and checking things. But again, in no time at all, all of a sudden you'll look and you're like, oh my gosh, they're an inch taller now. So, but it's a lot of fun.
We've been talking souffles with Cindy Hawkins of Circle City Suites. For more information on Cindy and her French-inspired pastry shop in the Indianapolis City Market, go to CircleCitySuites.com. Well, here we are in the middle of January, but for chocolatier Julie Boljak of Chocolate for the Spirit, that means one thing. It's only about a month until Valentine's Day. To find out what the holiday is like for a chocolatier, I stopped by her caramel shop recently for a little Valentine's Day update. It's a month away from Valentine's Day. You are a chocolatier. What is your life like this time of year?
I'm obsessed. I'm obsessed with all things Valentine's Day. So here's the deal. People assume that in the chocolate business, per se, that Valentine's Day is huge and maybe even the hugest. The holiday season that we just came through, there's Thanksgiving rolled in there. There's Christmas, Kwanzaa, Hanukkah, parties, all that. Okay. So it's a very extended period of time. And people consume a lot, plus they gift a lot. In total, that is the big time of year, okay? From a revenue perspective, that is it. Oftentimes, for the gifting, people are not necessarily looking for the most gourmet of our product line, okay? So, for instance, some of the bonbons and truffles boxed very fancy, that isn't necessarily what they're looking for during that period.
Oh, no, I would have thought that would catch their eye right away. What is it that they do want?
Toffee. Overall, the toffee is probably the number one seller, but I have a couple of connoisseur bars and the Mayan spice bar, so they're sort of all run neck to neck. So people will buy, like, maybe a variety. And, for instance, a lot of stocking stuffers, so the toffee and some of the items that we sell in the $10 range are really popular, so they'll buy a lot of those. Then comes Valentine's Day. People are not purchasing from multiple people.
Oh, sure, so they're not giving presents. It's not like you have a whole a present list to give, right?
Exactly. Typically, people who are going to give for Valentine's Day flowers, and chocolate. Now, the chocolate that they give for Valentine's Day is in my wheelhouse because it's going to be more the fine chocolate.
Oh, this is the really nice present kind of chocolate, right?
Exactly. So the fancy boxes and the day after Christmas, what I did was inventoried everything that I had, and I immediately put in my orders for the special packaging that I needed for Valentine's Day, okay? So They will gift, and what they gift is going to probably be, from a price perspective and a product perspective, a higher price, a more premium product. But they're not going to be buying for as many people.
Oh, so that does that balance out then?
Well, it's one day. There's an expectation right at the last minute that they're going to walk into my place and others, and they're going to have just a fantastic, huge choice. And it's all going to be there for them.
So they expect a big selection, you know, on February the 13th, right, when they're finally getting around to doing their shopping.
Absolutely. They expect that. Now, we could have the worst snowstorm we've ever had on that day, and we wouldn't see them. And it could go on the entire weekend. And there you go. People are not going to be buying Valentine chocolates on February 15th, 16th, and 17th.
So after the holiday, they start looking for markdowns, right?
So
this is a big this is a big timing thing for you, right? Of juggling and timing.
Yes. So, you know, so we get the packaging, and I've made in my mind, a list of what I want to make, and I also try to make something new every year. It's a fun time for me because I like to create. So it's a very creative experience, but it also is very risky, the timing of all this.
So it's all a gamble. So you have to gamble on the weather and the produce and the fact that whether people will come out. Oh, my goodness.
It is. Yeah, it's really fun. And people sort of think, oh, wow, that's your great big day. That maybe is your biggest day of the year. And it can be incredible.
Right. If you get the perfect lineup of the situation, right?
Right. So I've experienced in life that very few moments where everything has lined up perfectly. So I'm prepared to expect the unexpected.
Once Valentine's is over, tell me what you have coming up that people could look forward to. I know you've been doing some classes. So tell me about the classes that you have here at Chocolate for the Spirit.
Yes. Well, another objective of mine is to bring others on board with my journey for the pursuit of some of the world's best chocolate. Okay. A lot of the chocolate that we have experienced growing up, the beans have been bought at auctions, a low price, and fillers and artificial flavorings have been put in. And that's not what we're doing. We're working with chocolate where the chocolate itself is a star. Whether you just made a solid bar of it or did something else with it, we always want to feature the chocolate. So I have classes. One's called Connoisseur 101, where we do 2 hours of information and exploration and tasting and working our way through chocolate, some of the things that are familiar, all the way to some of the world's rarest and best chocolates. And then we're also doing a build your own chocolate bar classes where people get to select chocolate and then a variety of ingredients to do a little bit of what I get to do as a chocolatier, which is, you know, think about what might work together.
Like the types of chocolate paired with different flavors, that sort of thing?
Yes, fruits and nuts and spices, yes, cocoa nibs, for instance. And then they get bars to take home and share. It's interesting because they make 4 bars, and so far nobody is wanting to eat the bars here. Everybody's wanting to take the bars home.
They all want to take them home and show off and see what I made and see if they like other people like it.
So we do give a little award in those classes for best of show. But because nobody wants to break any of the bars to taste, it has to be a beauty contest. It's based solely on how do the bars look.
Yeah. And what kind of combinations do they come up with?
First of all, everybody really likes spices, a lot of spices, okay? We have a full line of different gourmet salts, so they're also getting some salt in their bars. We're seeing a lot of berries, like blueberries and dried strawberries, cranberries, nuts. People are really nuts about nuts, okay?
Now tell me what the price range is on those classes.
They are under $40. Sometimes we work with Living Social and Groupon, and people can get those classes for half price or even a better deal.
Now, tell me about where people can go for more information.
Well, we love our mailing list, folks, because that's the way that we know that we can connect. We are Chocolate Spirit on Facebook. The problem with Facebook, though, is Facebook is sort of cutting us off from the people that want to connect with us these days. So the sure way to connect with us is to go to our website, chocolateforthespirit.com, and then sign up for our newsletter there.
We've been talking with chocolatier Julie Boljak of Chocolate for the Spirit. For more information on Julie's artisan chocolates and what she has planned for Valentine's Day, go to chocolateforthespirit.com. Eat, Drink, Indiana Radio is made possible with support from Eskenazi Health. With its 315-bed hospital and inpatient facilities and 11 community health centers located throughout Indianapolis, eskenazihealth.edu. This week for our Cook This segment here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, we are heading into the kitchen with local chef John Adams. Formerly of Blue Beard and Plow and Anchor, John is currently doing private chefing and special event dinners, which meant that he stopped by his parents' house to take over their kitchen for our Cook This segment when he came up with a terrific way to cook squid. So this is a real challenge. So it's not even like we've done this at people's restaurants before or in their own kitchen, but you're walking into somebody else's kitchen.
It's my parents' kitchen, which I should know well, but I haven't cooked here in a while. So we'll see what we can dig up here. Got some celery, grape tomatoes, some grapefruit, parsnip, some lettuce and broccoli. I'm thinking we're going with an Italian stew of sorts.
What goes through your head when you think of something like squid?
Well, I think of either fried or braised, typically, or a quick saute. Like they say that you're either supposed to cook it for, like, you know, 3 minutes or 3 hours or something like that. I think fried is too easy, and that would be a little boring because we could do it with marinara sauce and call it a day, but I think we'd like to see something a little more interesting. So thinking of sort of like a white bean stew, but since that's traditionally like with pork, I want to do it with some braised calamari. So probably braise the calamari in some red wine or white wine if I can find some around here. But I'll probably kind of take the white bean stew kind of apart and, you know, kind of play with the components of that. I think I'm going to braise the vegetables kind of with the squid itself in some chicken stock. So I'll do some carrots, onions, and celery, just kind of traditional mirepoix with the wine and chicken stock. And then we'll make a white bean puree. If I found some broccoli in there too, so maybe we'll just kind of like sear a slice of broccoli, you know, to kind of set the calamari on top of. And I think that'll make it a little bit different. Mm-hmm. Start prepping the vegetables. See what kind of knives my parents have here. Not bad.
Okay.
I'm impressed. It's a sharp Wusthof. We'll work on some pretty knife cuts. Okay. Sometimes people at home don't spend the time to cut stuff right, and if you have the time, might as well make it pretty. Alright, got our carrot, celery, and onion. We'll get a pan on and start searing.
So now, tell me what you've got. You've got like a mirepoix going, right?
Yeah, I'm getting this pan super hot, and we're going to sear the squid, and then hit it with the wine, or actually then throw in the vegetables and hopefully pick up some of that flavor in the pan, and then reduce the wine out, throw the squid back in with the vegetables, and let it cook down for a little bit. And then we're going to work on a white bean puree and get that broccoli steak ready to this here. Got some rice bran oil, which has a high smoke point, so we can get the pan smoking hot here.
All
right. Get a little color. Best way to braise an octopus or squid, unless you want it to just have a really subtle flavor, is to really sear it. You're gonna get the caramelization, and you'll taste it later.
So, what are you looking for as you're cooking it?
Looking for that like nice golden brown. Looking for golden brown and delicious. The GB&D. Go ahead and throw the meatball in here. Does it smell pretty good?
It does smell good. So now you've got a can of tomatoes, right?
Diced tomatoes. So as soon as this mirepoix gets kind of sweat and a little bit of color on it, we'll add the wine, reduce that out, and then add the tomatoes. If we don't reduce the wine, it's going to end up tasting kind of bitter, and you taste the alcohol that's in there. Got another pan on to start our white bean puree, which I'm going to do. It's pretty simple with sweat some onion and add the puree and some chicken stock, and then, add the beans and the chicken stock, and then we'll puree it. Take this one off in olive oil.
This is what you're going to saute the onions in?
The onions, yeah. So like the white beans and olive oil are kind of a partnership with the silky texture we're looking for there. Since we're going to sweat the onions, we don't need to get it as hot like when we use the rice bran oil for the squid.
So those are going in with the onions?
We're
going
to add them with the onions. The lack of fresh herbs, we'll do a little herb de Provence again, just kind of get their flavor going again. The wine is about reduced here, where it's almost totally gone. That's when we add these tomatoes. Add the chicken stock to the beans and let them start to cook for a little bit. Since they're already cooked, they'll be ready to puree soon.
And so now you're going to cook the big slice of broccoli. So you're going to sear that, like you said, like a steak, right?
Yep. So we're going to get this oil the pan crazy hot again and season our broccoli through and through.
Again, you're seasoning it while it's still on the cutting board.
Mm-hmm. It's not going to stick so well, but we got to try.
So now tell me what you're looking for on the broccoli.
That's the same kind of caramelization that we got from the squid. That deep golden brown. It's gonna make it taste sweeter, meatier.
And again with the seasoning, right?
Here it again.
Okay, so you've added a little bit of butter to the broccoli, right?
Where there was just a little bit of that water left, so it's kind of coating it and making it more sexy.
Okay, so you've taken the squid out of there and drained it, right? Mm-hmm. So
yep. Can't decide if I'm going to leave it whole or cut it yet, but I think leaving it whole is going to present better, and since it sliced so easily,
right.
That wouldn't be a bad idea. Get some.
What are you going to do with the grapefruit?
Well, I'm going to cut it into segments. With some oranges, and then I just got a few celery leaves left from there, so we can make a little kind of salad garnish. Add some acidity and some freshness to to the dish.
Got all of that
leftover orange juice. Gonna squeeze in the sauce here and brighten it up. Even a little bit on the broccoli. That acid.
This is another thing you mentioned that's different in restaurant kitchens and home kitchens, that last little burst of acid, right?
Yeah, so that's going to really increase the flavor because the acid and the freshness, is just something that home cooks don't always think about, and they don't necessarily have a case of lemons in there walk in to draw from, but something that we always have around.
So now, tell me what you're doing here to sort of, before you put the dish together?
Just making a little citrus celery leaf salad to give it some fresh, some green, some more aroma, and then, that fresh, acidic, like, kind of punch, especially with the richness of that white bean puree, and then, the meatiness of the steak, and then all these other reduced flavors are gonna, they'll all be well and good together, but this will make it, brighter and fresher.
So now, how are you going to put the dish together?
For fun, we'll plate it like we would for a restaurant, so I'm going to, we want to be able to see everything on the plate and then, have a kind of variety of colors and shapes and textures and things. Quintessential swoosh smear on the plate. But then I'm going to take a little bit kind of in a circle around just to help kind of contain the sauce that we're going to put in there. So it has somewhere to go. Drain off the broccoli so it doesn't make our plate all greasy. Find the whichever side we think is more pretty, more presentable.
And so the broccoli goes on top of the bean puree.
Yeah, so not totally covering up the swoosh there. We're going to offset it just a little bit. Just spoon on that vegetables, gravy liquid, sauce there.
And then so the squid's going right on top.
Yeah, the squid's kind of the main feature, so we didn't want to bury it. So we're just laying them on top. Sort of that rustic, like, cascading thing where it just kind of falls down, but, with some intention.
And then you have your citrus salad,
right? And then we have our little citrus salad. And give it a little color, a little height, a little brightness to it. Placing that on right on top.
That's beautiful.
That's it.
Now, so describe it to me and tell me what we have here.
Well, so we have a kind of a play on a white bean stew with a braised calamari, braised in the red wine and the tomatoes with the mirepoix, the white bean pureed rather than as part of the stew. Then the broccoli steak on there just to add some green vegetable and something to mop up the sauce with, and then the grapefruit, orange, and celery leaf salad on top.
We've been cooking with local chef John Adams, and we'll talk more with him later in today's show about a special dinner he's cooking up with local chef Eli Anderson. So stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Shapiro's Delicatessen has been an Indiana tradition for more than 100 years, since the family opened a tiny grocery and deli in 1905. This year, the Delicatessen, under the leadership of Brian Shapiro, the fourth generation of the family, is opening a location in the Fashion Mall at Keystone at the Crossing. The new Twisted Traditions menu offers just a bit of a different take on the classic deli items. I stopped in for a tour of the new restaurant with Brian Shapiro and got an update on the new menu from marketing director and brand manager Sally Keck Shapiro.
It's still the classic traditional Shapiro's food, but it's delivered in a twisted way for us. We're doing sliders, corned beef pastrami sliders. So you can come in. I can't tell you how many people, the husbands that came in, they're like, now I won't mind going to the mall. I can go get a beer and a corned beef sandwich and watch the game on TV while my wife goes and shops. So I'm like, okay, when people are going to come in to get a beer, we have to have something. A little something to eat. We're not really appetizer kind of place. So we came up with doing sliders. So you can come get one little slider and a beer. Or you can get a whole Reuben as well. Corned beef slider. I think it's pastrami slider is $4.45. And a corned beef slider and a brisket slider is $4.20. in a beer. Only Sun King. We're doing the local route on the beer, and we have wine as well. But you know, corned beef and beer just you know really go together. Oh, yeah. So,
well, I think that's kind of neat, you know, that you have local beer. Now,
yes,
it
we have that downtown as well.
Right, but just Sun King.
Just Sun King. Okay. Mm-hmm. We have three different varieties, different brews of theirs. But yeah, we switched this fall to Sun King exclusively, and our beer sales went through the roof.
So any other sort of menu differences that people could look for?
It's more mainstreamed from downtown. You know, we have three or four soups every day downtown. We have a special 5 days a week. We've got a lot of food downtown. Here we're doing our main sellers. You know, you're not going to be able to come in and get liver and onions on Thursday. You know, our special downtown on Thursday is liver and onions. We're not doing the daily specials up here. To start, we're just doing our sandwiches. We're just, you know, doing we're doing a couple of things really well to handle the first few days of opening.
Macaroni and cheese?
Of course, macaroni and cheese. Yes. Yes, we will have macaroni and cheese. We will have coleslaw and our potato salad. Macaroni and cheese is, of course, yeah, that's a staple. Corned beef, pastrami, all the sandwiches, they'll be here. We're doing baked chicken. We're doing meatloaf. Those will always be here once we have the full menu up and running. All the cheesecakes and, you know, like our top five cakes. And
you can get those.
You can get those here. Yes, you'll be able to get your pound of corned beef, and that's at the marketplace. So the marketplace is where if you've gone online and ordered online and you're coming to pick up a sandwich, you can pick that up at the marketplace. Or if you come in to do a, you know, a pound of corned beef, a whole cake, something like that. So that's more of your shopping at the market kind of marketplace. If you're dining in or carry out just as a sandwich, you'd come to the main door and come over past the hand washing station to the cashiers, to our staff there, and that would be a, you know, would you like to dine in? We will have real plates, we'll have the china, and to go obviously will be the to take away paper products.
Well, I think it sounds wonderful. So I could walk in and just buy 2 pounds of corned beef.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Of course, yes. So rye bread and sure. 2 pounds of corned beef and Swiss cheese, and you could go home and make your own Reuben.
Right. Then we're going to go home for the game or something.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. And of course, and we'll have catering from here as well.
Oh, okay.
With all the office space nearby, we'll have catering and. Yeah, and it's, you know, with a $100 minimum free delivery within, you know, the Keystone at the Crossing area, I think it's 5 miles or something. So, yeah, so the catering, all the offices would be very convenient. We have incredible customers. We really, really are lucky. There was somebody who literally drove up from Louisville with a cooler, and he wants to start doing that every Thursday, and he took a bunch of menus, and he's going to charge service for his friends and drive up and get deli to take back to his friends in Louisville. So, you know, it's a really incredible customers, and our very hardworking staff is, you know, some of our staff's been with us 35, 40 years. And it is. And I just saw someone who used to be with us in Carmel, and she's now at the Julian Center, and she's coming back to work a couple nights a week because it's a family. I mean, we really have they're just wonderful, wonderful people. It's, we're very lucky.
We've been talking with Sally Keck Shapiro about the new Twisted Traditions menu at the Fashion Mall location of Shapiro's Delicatessen. The new location should open today. For more information, go to shapiros.com. Eat Drink Indiana Radio is made possible with support from Eskenazi Health, providing care to nearly 1 million outpatient visitors each year with the mission to advocate, care, teach, and serve at its hospital and inpatient facility and 11 community health centers located throughout Indianapolis. EskenaziHealth.edu. Well, just because it is the middle of winter here in Indiana doesn't mean that you can't find some fresh Indiana produce. Josh Horgan of Annabelle's Garden searches out growers around the state, those who are perhaps growing in greenhouses or hoop houses, and brings their produce to Indianapolis chefs and consumers. I caught up with Josh recently and sat down to talk a little bit about the challenges of bringing this produce into Indianapolis.
The biggest challenge is logistics, you know, trying to do what we do in Indianapolis, grow the business, grow Annabelle's Garden, pick up new restaurants, go out and meet the chefs. And then when you meet them, you have to service their account then. And it's literally just us two. And we're drawing things, especially now when the season's cold, we can't grow it ourselves, from all over the state. And having to drive down to, like, southern Indiana, like, literally right by Louisville on the Indiana border, and then get back up to, you leave at, like, 4:35 in the morning, get back up to Indianapolis so that you can get produce packed and then distribute it to the chefs so they have it in time for dinner. That's the biggest challenge, is getting it into central Indianapolis and then breaking the large packages down into smaller ones so that the chefs can have it. I brought some of the samples here. This stuff is grown down in southern Indiana in aquaponics. The plugs are compressed coconut fibers. So these are the little roots. They grow in trays. This is black kale, Cavallo Nero. It's a really trendy leafy green right now amongst the chefs. And we're selling the heck out of that. People really, really like it. This is a blend here called the Southern Mix because it's grown in southern Indiana. And they're grown in the same coconut fibers. And leafy greens, I think, in the winter are one of the hardest things for people to find that are good. And we're actually doing it. This is a beautiful blend of... this is the spicy mustard, ruby steaks. And then there's broccoli sprouts. There's red Russian kale in it. And then there's collards. So it's a really hearty, nutrient-dense green mix. This has just started maybe 2 to 3 weeks ago. We started distributing that. So we're really excited about working with them. We've got some carrots here that I met this farmer. He's out in Centerville. So one of the things that I learned years ago before I was even in this business, I was a caddy at Highland Country Club. I knocked a golf ball through Ross Ferris's window. I met Ross, and he told me, you can't be the biggest grower and the biggest seller and handle it. You have to pick one or the other. And I still am kind of straddling the lines in both. And it's really hard to produce and get new clients and sell the produce to them. And then when you get so many, and then the word spreads. You know, one chef sees what another chef has and they want it. And then you have to start selling it to them. And it's like you can only produce so much. So you have to form alliances with other farms. And that's what we've done, is we find farmers in Indiana that are willing to work with us and grow the crops that we know the chefs want. Because that's the hardest thing when you're a grower. It's kind of like throwing a dart at a board with a blindfold. It's like, I'm going to grow this, and I hope it's going to grow well. And I hope, you know, the pests and nature all lines up. And then if that happens, it's like, well, now I have to sell it, you know. And you focus all this energy and time on growing it, and that's a lot of work. And then if you do a large amount of it, it takes just as much energy to distribute it properly. And that's one of the things that I think we're really finding a niche market in this state, is we're working with these smaller farms that specialize in specific items, and they're producing it for us, and now they know that they're going to sell it to me, and I'll get it to the chefs that are going to use it and cherish it and prize it and put it on the plate to the customers that are going to realize it's something special. It's really fun.
Well, I think that's important, you know, that, you know, because if people are, you know, they could spend so much time actually trying to get their products to the market, that they, like you said, then they can't do the job of the growing of the stuff. So I think it's important that connection between the growers and the chefs and consumers. I know there's issues with farmers markets.
The politics.
Right, you know, and you know, and the grower only rules and that sort of thing. But it sounds like there's a niche for someone to, you know, reach out to farmers around the state.
There definitely is. And it's something that's needed. The farmers need somebody that can take their product and distribute it for them. And a lot of times, although I'm buying a lot from them, in their small communities that they're growing this product, the price that they're getting for their product at a retail market in their small farm community is even less than what I'm willing to pay, what's a wholesale price in my mind, because I'm going to take it to the big city and sell it. And when I purchase it from a farm in a smaller community, what I'm willing to pay is usually what they're selling it for at a retail price. So it makes them just as happy. And I'm not a guy walking up at their farmer's market buying 2 or 3 pounds of tomatoes. I'm buying 500-600 pounds for the same price as a guy on a Saturday morning at their farmer's market in their little town. But I'm buying way more from them at usually about the same price or close to it.
So it works out. So it's good for them. You know, it helps your business. You get the produce to the chefs and consumers. So tell me a little bit about the the business here, and now can regular people purchase this?
Yeah, they can. Our business started 4 years ago. It's named Annabelle's Garden after my youngest daughter, in about a 10 by 12 foot plot in the backyard in Broderpool of my house. And I was growing purple Cherokees, black Crims, and Mr. Stripey heirloom tomatoes, although Mr. Stripey's not 100% heirloom. It was a lot of fun. And I, at the time, was in culinary school at the Chef's Academy, and I was in my internship, and I wanted to get all sorts of, you know, I wanted to expose myself to as much as I could. I couldn't afford to eat at Recess, which is my favorite restaurant, as much as I wanted to. So I was trading Greg Hardesty for food, and it was like it would get my brain turning when I would be exposed to what he was doing. And I was in culinary school. And then other chefs saw the tomatoes he had, and they would ask me for them. And that kind of like a light bulb went off, and I said, I could sell these. You know, so it started with heirloom tomatoes, and then it went to spinach, and now it's everything.
We've been talking with Josh Horgan of Annabelle's Garden in Indianapolis. You can look for his produce at Wildwood Market in Fountain Square, or find his booth at the Jewish Community Center Farmers Market in Indianapolis on Sundays from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the JCC at 6701 Hoover Road. Indianapolis diners became enamored last year with private dinners and pop-up restaurants, and the trend shows no signs of easing up in 2015. In fact, local chefs John Adams, Eli Anderson, and Nicole Anke Anderson, for example, are teaming up for a dinner next weekend. I talked with John Adams recently about the dinner and about a few other special events the chef's planning. So tell me, though, about the special dinner that you have coming up.
All right, we're doing it at H2O Sushi, which is now not open, which is leaves us a nice blank canvas to do dinners like this at. So our first one we have is Bosam, which is a kind of Korean inspired like sort of traditional feast where we'll have a slow roasted pork shoulder on the table with bib lettuce and steamed rice and kimchi, pickles, and all kinds of other condiments, as well as like oysters on the half shell, and you kind of assemble these lettuce wraps however you like, with whatever you want. So that's kind of the center of the dinner. We're doing a couple other courses, so there's a salad and a hot appetizer and a dessert, some awesome play on their cookies, obviously. And then we're gonna have a couple awesome cocktails kind of match up with it, and then you know, Asian beer and, you know, a red and a white wine. So it should just be a kind of a fun family style dinner. We're going to do it for about 30 people. So I kind of envision having a couple tables, big tables where, you know, everybody's going to eat and, you know, pass these things around and kind of, assemble and make their own feast. And it should be a lot of fun. We're doing it two nights. We're going to do it on Friday the 23rd and Saturday the 24th. It's $48 for the food only, which doesn't include the tax or gratuity or beverages. And we're selling tickets through Eventbrite for it. So,
yeah, are tickets still available as of right now?
Yeah, we started with 30 for each night, and you know we've had some interest so far. But at this point, we still have some. But I would recommend getting it soon because I'm just as we speak getting some emails about people buying tickets. So.
Now, are there other similar kind of dinners that you might want to do that people might look forward to in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. And we're still kind of thinking about some themes, but some ideas we've had have been one kind of inspired by your Facebook post about classic French. So we want to see what we can do with that. I mean, doing these smaller dinners as opposed to doing it at a restaurant, you know, we could have the ability to, you know, stand there and baste a Cote de Boeuf all day, or make coq au vin the real way. We're also, I spent a while in Louisville, so I kind of picked up some of the Low Country cooking ideas and inspiration from that. So we want to do one of those. I've always loved cooking Cajun Creoles. We have one of those, and thinking about it doing a vegetarian or even vegetarian Indian or something like that, like trying to do like the northern style of Indian. I have a couple uncles that are in Sri Lanka right now, which just kind of gave me that idea. I've always been kind of fascinated with it. So, you know, we can kind of use these dinners as kind of paying for my study of different, you know, cooking styles and stuff like that. And, you know, it's fun because you get to eat the, you know, the progress or eat the practice.
Now, you also mentioned maybe some private cooking classes or things that you might do in the future on particular styles or different types of cuisine, maybe?
This time of year, you know, we always think about, you know, eating healthier, and, you know, I'm falling victim to that, too. So I'm kind of looking into some, like, different alternative diets and, you know, maybe, you know, vegetarian or gluten-free kind of cooking. So as you know, I'm trying to study that myself and help people, you know, find ways to make, you know, healthy food taste, you know, more delicious. So I have plenty of, you know, tips and techniques and things like that. But, you know, other than that, I've always been fascinated with ethnic food and know plenty of different styles. So I would definitely, you know, using this time that I'm, you know, not in a professional kitchen right now to hopefully, you know, go in people's houses and, you know, teach them how to cook some stuff that what they have on hand, or, you know, maybe take a trip to Saraga or the farmer's market and, you know, kind of go shopping and see what, you know, see it through my eyes sort of thing, and see how I view their pantry or what, you know, what possibilities they have.
We've been talking with Chef John Adams. For more information on the upcoming Supper Club dinner at H2O Sushi, go to the Four Birds Bakery page on Facebook. You've been listening to Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD2 and WFYI.org. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. This week, I'd like to thank our guests, Cindy Hawkins of Circle City Suites and Julie Bolchak of Chocolate for the Spirit. I'd also like to thank Chef John Adams, Josh Horgan of Annabelle's Garden, and Sally Keck Shapiro of Shapiro's Delicatessen. And thanks to producer John Ketzenberger for helping to bring you Eat, Drink, Indiana Radio.